What a great song. And if you were here with us last week, we started of Jesus Christ, and he's in these trials. And so we've talked about over the last few weeks, he's had six trials that Jesus has to face. The first three are with the Jewish leaders, and then there's these three follow-up trials where Jesus is actually now in front of the Roman leaders, and it's the Jews that can kind of keep taking him over from place to place because that's where they're sent, and it's all intended to try to get this Jesus out of the picture. But what is so remarkable is you look at this series of trials, and what you see is you see a bunch of people who are, in a sense, trying to grasp onto some semblance of control. You know, you have the Jewish leaders who are, in a sense, wanting to contain and keep what they've always had the way that they want it. They want to be able to control Jesus. Jesus, you're kind of messing up our status quo, if you will. You're kind of messing up our socioeconomic status. We're not okay with that. And so in some capacity, the Jewish leaders really want to control Jesus so much so, in fact, they actually want him killed. They want him out of the picture. And so they're trying to hold on to their control. And then you have these Roman leaders, and we talked about it with Pilate last week. So the Jews take Jesus to Pilate, and they say, Pilate, here's a nutshell. He's guilty. We want you to take him. We want you to get rid of him. And Pilate recognizes that Jesus is not guilty. He recognizes there's nothing to charge him with. And so Pilate then in this situation is trying to hold on to some semblance of control. He wants to keep his job. He wants to keep his life. And if he handles this poorly or incorrectly, he knows that Caesar, the king of Rome at that time, could very well just get rid of him. Not only lose his job, lose his life. And so he's trying to hold on to some semblance of control. And so we have this jockeying for control throughout this scenario, just like the song that we sang. But what's amazing in this picture, the one person that they're trying to control is the only one who really has perfect control throughout it. And you see Christ, and we're going to see him now in these last two trials before these Roman officials. And here he is standing in sometimes silence, and he's in total control of the situation because he knows where he came from. He knows where he's going. He knows how to get there. And he holds on to that control throughout. And it's just, it's absolutely astounding. And so what I wanted to just kind of point out is if Jesus, who can control this situation, even in those dire capacities, someone who can have that kind of control, that kind of sovereignty, then when we find ourselves in our life that is out of control, can we not trust Jesus, who controls a situation like that, to be able to handle the things that we need him to control in our lives? You know what I mean? And yet, we oftentimes go through our lives, I can't control this, I can't control this. And so we kind of grasp at straws, if you will, trying to control what we can control, and yet we never had it to begin with. And we're going to see it with Pilate. You know, Pilate is even at one point today going to say, don't you realize, Jesus, that I'm in control, in a nutshell? And Jesus says, basically, you're an idiot. And we'll see that this morning as well. So we left off last week. Jesus had been with Pilate. I'm going to move this. I don't want to mess her stuff up. There we go. Jesus has been with Pilate this last time we were together. He's at this first trial. And what we saw is Pilate brings Jesus in. The Jews brought him before Pilate, and basically they laid out three accusations. They said, okay, Pilate, we need you to take care of this guy. Number one, he's kind of raising a ruckus, all right? He's raising a rebellion. And Jesus, we saw in his words before as he was arrested, he says, why are you guys coming at me with sticks and knives and swords and all that stuff like that? Have I come to raise a rebellion? No, not at all. There's been no evidence of that. In fact, I taught openly in the temples, you could have arrested me at any time. Broad daylight, you could have done that, but you did not do that. And so your accusation, the Jewish accusation saying he's trying to raise a rebellion, is just unfounded. There's no substantiation for it whatsoever, period. There's a second accusation. Well, he's trying to avoid paying taxes to Caesar. He doesn't think that we should do that. He's against paying taxes. Well, all the Jews were against paying taxes, and Jesus maybe was the only one who actually wasn't against paying taxes, because we saw him when confronted by the Jewish leaders, when they said, all right, Jesus, we're going to trap you now. What should we do with this money, all right? Should we give it to Caesar, or should we keep it? What's right? And Jesus basically says, whose picture's on the coin? And they said, well, it's Caesar's. Well, then give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and give to God what is God. And so Jesus was not against paying taxes to the Roman officials. I know it disappoints some of us when it comes April. It's like we would like Jesus to be against paying taxes, because somehow we could maybe manipulate our taxes in a dishonest way so that I have to pay a little bit less, okay? You know, take advantage of the tax laws. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that. However, let's be honest with the way we do our taxes. The third accusation was, well, and he calls himself a king, and that was the only one that was actually true. That is accurate. Jesus did consider himself a king because he was a king. But what they're doing in that accusation to Pilate, they're saying, Pilate, you've got to recognize this. You have a guy that's claiming to be a king. That's a big deal for you because right now you've got Caesar and he's the only king. You let someone else come in there, that's a problem. You need to deal with that. So here was Pilate having to deal with these accusations, and all of them could be kind of a big deal in regards to his position because he's a governor. He's in Jerusalem right now because of the stir that is in Jerusalem because of the Passover coming in. So they would have put in these extra officials. They would have brought in extra soldiers because they did not want there to be this uprising of the Jewish people at the time. And so we left off then. Pilate had just asked Jesus, so are you a king? And Jesus basically says, yes, I am a king, but I'm not. My kingdom is not of this world. It's of a different world. And then he lays out this passage. And so he says, my kingdom is basically, I come to testify the truth. In other words, I am the king of truth, is what Jesus had laid out. And right as we concluded last week then, we looked at this in Pilate's response to this idea that Jesus is truth. He came to testify the truth. Everything about him is truth. And Pilate's like, what is truth? And you can kind of inflect it a number of different ways, but one very possible option with what Pilate is dealing with is here. He's a governor. He's dealing with all of these accusations all the time. This isn't the only one he's dealing with. And so he's constantly in this position to have to decipher what is true. How is he going to make these rulings? And so that's part of his job day in and day out is, in a sense, to figure out who's telling the truth. And so he's kind of sick of that. It's like, okay, here's Jesus saying, I am your source of truth. And Pilate says, I have no idea sometimes what truth is. What is truth? You're the one that's going to tell me the truth. I hear that all the time. And now here you're the one that's going to testify. And with this, he went out again to the Jews that were gathered there. And he says to them, I don't know in a sense if this guy's the testifier of truth or not. But I can tell you this, I find no basis for the charges that you guys are bringing up against him. In other words, he is an innocent man. And then we've been talking about this idea of the rope for the last few weeks, okay? And Jesus says he came to testify to the truth. In other words, Jesus kind of drew us a straight line for truth. But Pilate's doing this as well. We see the Jewish leaders doing this as well. And we do it all the time where we kind of grab that rope and we want to bend that rope to fit our truth. And Jesus has laid out what that truth is, but yet we want to, it's like, no, but Jesus, your line of truth is not really fitting with what's going to make me happy. So what I would like to do is I'd like to take that truth, I'd like to bend it here and say, now that's the truth, I can live with that. And that is not what Jesus is getting at, that is not what Jesus wants for us, but that's what we've been wrestling with, and that's what the Jewish leaders and the Roman leaders have been looking at. And so Pilate came to this recognition, whether this guy is actually the testifier of truth or not, I don't know. But I will tell you this, I find no basis for these accusations that you have brought. He's, in other words, at this moment, Pilate is saying, Jesus is innocent. He came to the conclusion after hearing the testimony that Jesus is innocent. There it is, he has declared it. And now look at this response that we have. We find this in Luke chapter 23. After Pilate had come out and declared Jesus innocent, the Jewish leaders are obviously not going to be okay with that. They want to deal with that. That is not okay. And here's what they say. Again, Luke 23 is where we find those first three accusations, and so they kind of resort back to that. He says, don't you understand, Pilate? He stirs up all the people all over Judea by his teaching. He started in Galilee and has come all the way here. This is a light bulb moment for Pilate, because right now he has come into this position where he feels this pressure from the Jewish people. If he doesn't act according to how they want, there could be a rebellion. If there is a rebellion, he could very well lose his job by Caesar because he couldn't handle the crowd. He could very well lose his life by Caesar because he didn't handle the crowd. Because Caesar was volatile that way, that could happen. And so here it is, Pilate, in a very delicate situation. He's just said, I find no basis for the charges in this man. They said, you will find some charges in this man. He is raising up a ruckus. He's done it all the way in Galilee. He's bringing it down here. Do something about this, Pilate. But Pilate hears his light bulb moment. He sees, Galilee. Did you say Galilee? Well, here's the thing. If you remember way back when we first started the series in the Gospel of John, Galilee was up here, and that's where Jesus kind of started his ministry. Okay? They're down here in Jerusalem right now. This is Jerusalem where all of the people would have come for Passover. So that's quite a span. And what the Jews are saying, he started this ruckus up in Galilee. He brought it all the way down here with him. All of these people are following him. Don't you remember a week ago, they were throwing palm branches down and celebrating, here comes, you know, Hosanna, Hosanna, here comes Jesus in the name of the Lord. And so you have this, but as soon as he says Galilee, something triggers in Pilate's mind because he knows that there's another ruler who is in charge of Galilee. And so Pilate thinks, I can rid myself of this dangerous problem by sending this Jesus over to Herod. And Herod would have been, here's his palace, he would have had a place in Jerusalem here that he would come to during times such as Passover, because they needed, again, they'd bring in these extra officials, they'd bring in these extra Roman soldiers, because this was a very volatile time, and Rome would, in a sense, say, all right, you guys, head to Jerusalem, the Passover is coming, we need to make sure everything stays subdued. And so Herod would have been there as well. And so Pilate recognizes his opportunity, and he sends Jesus over to Herod. Herod can deal with this Jesus. Now, who is this Herod? Herod is, this is not the King Herod when Jesus was born. This is Herod Antipas, I believe, was his name. And at this time, he would have been the ruler at the time when, if you recall, John the Baptist was arrested, and John the Baptist was beheaded. And Herod is the one that beheaded John the Baptist because his stepdaughter was a good dancer. It's really what it turns out to be, okay? And there's a long story involved in that. So in a nutshell, here was Herod. His stepdaughter came in, did a dance, and said, wow, you're a really good dancer. I'll give you anything you want. And she said, because of her mother's coaching, I would like John the Baptist's head on a platter. Boom. Okay, there's John the Baptist's head on the platter. So that's kind of who this Herod is. He likes entertainment. And we're going to see that more so this morning. That's what he likes. He's kind of like, whatever pleases me is good. All right, the dancing was great. So, yeah, cut off John the Baptist's head. Well, I kind of like the guy, but it's worth it. So off goes his head. But here's what we encounter then. This is with Herod. So in Luke chapter 23, we have this encounter. And this would have happened. So Jesus goes to Pilate first, and then he's sent off to Herod. Watch this. Because you see this character of Herod in the midst of it. And even in the midst of this, you're going to see something really kind of, I didn't see that before. Kind of cool in the midst of it. It's not the main point, but there's something, there's an element in there I want you to grasp. So when Herod saw Jesus, he was greatly pleased because for a long time he had been wanting to see Jesus. I don't think Herod cared much for Jesus' teaching, but he wanted to see this man who did all these wonderful miracles all throughout Israel. From what he had heard about him, he had hoped to see him perform a sign of some sort. I can just see here comes Herod, or Jesus in with Herod. Herod's got this water. He says, all right, Jesus, I want to see it. I heard about this whole thing you did with this water. You turned it into wine. Boom. Have at it. Turn this water into wine. And what we see in Jesus' response, he does absolutely nothing. Oh, yeah, I remember that one blind man you made see? Here, I got some blind men. We'll gouge out their eyes, in fact, and then you can kind of heal their eyes. But that would be a neat trick. We'd like to see that. You know, so there's this, basically, Jesus is on display right now because he wants to see Jesus do these tricks. He wants to be entertained. That's exactly what he's after. So he plied him with many questions, but Jesus gave him no answer. The chief priests and the teachers of the law were standing there vehemently accusing him. So here's the teachers of the law in front of Herod saying, this man's guilty, this man's guilty, this man's guilty. Then Herod and his soldiers ridiculed and mocked him. So Jesus does nothing. He stays silent. Who's in control? I'll tell you who thinks they're in control. And it's Herod. You know, but even in the midst of that, when Herod is wanting to control Jesus and have Jesus do all of these tricks, even in the midst of that, I think Herod's got to know, I can't make this guy do nothing. I know the double negative. So then Herod and his soldiers ridicule him and mock him. So if we're not going to have you do tricks for us, we will mock you. We will tease you. They dressed him in an elegant robe, and they sent him back to Pilate. That day, Herod and Pilate became friends. Before this, they had been enemies. Even in the midst of Jesus' mocking, even in the midst of the teasing and the ridicule and the abuse, Jesus brings a ministry of reconciliation. Isn't that nuts? You know, I don't know that that was the main point of what was going on that Luke is trying to record here. But look at what's going on here. Even in the midst of what Jesus is standing there, staying silent, totally in control, even in the midst of that, Jesus' life brings this form of reconciliation between two of the enemy leaders. It strikes me. You know, and so we look at this idea of these relationships that we have and we have conflict. Well, Jesus is about, we see that through the scriptures, is about reconciled relationships. And here you have one example. But what's interesting is even back in Luke chapter 18, Jesus, before this stuff happened, Jesus told his disciples that this is exactly what was going to happen. So look at this. So Jesus took the 12 aside and he told them, we are going up to Jerusalem, and everything that is written by the prophets about the Son of Man will be fulfilled. He will be delivered over to the Gentiles. That's just what's happened. He's been over to Pilate and now to Herod. Those are the Gentiles. He will be delivered to the Gentiles. They will mock him. They will insult him. This is before it happened. They will spit on him, and they will flog him and kill him. Those two haven't happened yet. It's just absolutely astounding. Jesus is in control, and he said these things would happen before they even happened. Jesus predicted everything that was going to happen before it happened to demonstrate that even when it looks like I have lost control, I am in complete control of everything that is going on there. Matthew 27 puts it like this. So while Pilate was sitting on the judgment seat, so this is that meanwhile moment. So Jesus has been sent off to Herod. Herod is in the process of mocking him, putting on crowns and robes. We're going to see more of that in a little bit. And then teasing him. But in the midst of that, we have this other scenario that kind of pops itself up. And Matthew gives us the account of this. And this is with Pilate's wife. And this really puts Pilate in all that much more of a difficult situation, because if you are married and your wife is giving you some strong instructions and you are struggling whether to heed those strong instructions or not, you find yourself in a bit of a predicament, because you know that if you go against her instructions, there's going to be, you know, things to pay. All right, so here's what we have is, meanwhile then, while Pilate was sitting on the judgment throne, the judgment seat, his wife sent this message to him, and his wife says, don't have anything to do with that innocent man. So she hasn't even known Jesus, but she recognizes this man is innocent. She's had a dream about him. Don't have anything to do with that innocent man, for I suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him. So that throws another piece into what Pilate's got to deal with. Now I have to deal with my wife, too, in making this very difficult decision. So Jesus comes back after he goes to Herod. Herod sends him back. They become good friends. And here's where we find it then. It says in John chapter 18, verse 39, Jesus is back with Pilate. And so Pilate has made some attempts. He has said Jesus is innocent. That didn't work. He sent Jesus to Pilate, sent Jesus to Herod. That didn't work. These have been ineffective ways to get off the hook, if you will, to not have to deal with this Jesus anymore, to not be guilty of sending this Jesus to his death. And so he keeps trying these different scenarios to try to get out of it. And he says in John 18, verse 39, but this, it is your custom. So he's telling this to the Jews now. But it's your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of Passover. And that's recorded in the Mishnah, some of the old Jewish writings, that this would have been their custom during the Passover, that they would basically sacrifice a lamb on behalf of one of the prisoners, and the prisoner would then get set free. I mean, it's remarkable. And we're going to talk more about that in a couple of weeks, this parallel that gets drawn into here. So look at what's going on. The tradition would have been, we will sacrifice a lamb for this prisoner who was sentenced to death, and we will let that person go. And so Pilate, who knows of this tradition, he says, but it's your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release to you the King of the Jews? They shouted back, no, we don't want him. Give us Barabbas. Barabbas was taken part in an uprising, which was more than just this raising a big to-do, but he was murderous. He had killed people in this uprising, trying to stir people against Rome. He was a murderer. He was a violent man. He was a thief. All of those things. He's a treacherous person. And the Jews recognize this, and they say, we don't care what he was. We want Jesus dead. Give us Barabbas instead. It's just this idea of sacrificing a lamb for the sake of one of the prisoners sentenced to death. That's exactly what's happening. So now tell me who's in control. Is it the Jews? Is it Herod? Is it Pilate? Who's in control? So then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. And so now it's interesting because this steps into another sequence of events. It is actually believed, most scholars will look at it, and there's strong evidence that suggests that Jesus was actually flogged twice. There was two different lengths. There was two different severities of floggings in the Roman culture. There was one that was basically used as a deterrent. It was a flogging where they certainly would be whipped. It was still the same number of times, but the way that they did it would leave the person severely beaten and punished, but not to the point of bleeding near death like the second flogging would be. It's believed that this first one here now, this one in John chapter 19, was actually considered the lighter of the two floggings. Jesus will have suffered both of them. And so what ends up happening, and we see it evidenced in Luke 23, it says, therefore I will punish him and then release him. So the idea of it was that I believe that this is Pilate's fourth attempt to get rid of Jesus, to not have to deal with him anymore. First was, I proclaim him innocent, could let him go. The crowd riots up, says, no way, you can't do that. The second attempt was, I'm going to send him off to Herod. Well, Herod sent him back. That didn't work. So now I'm still stuck with this problem. Third one was, I want to release him. You guys are accustomed to give you back a prisoner at the Passover. I'd like it to be Jesus. You want me to give him back to you? They said, no, give us Barabbas, give us this killer instead. And so he gets sent back to him. So the third attempt, fourth attempt now is, well, I will basically punish him because you want him accused. I will punish him and then release him. So here's the evidence that we see of what's going on with Jesus and how it aligns with Isaiah 53. And it says, but he was pierced for our transgressions and he was crushed for our iniquities. And the punishment that brought us peace was on him. And by his wounds we are healed. And we're going to look closer at that Isaiah 53 in a couple of weeks. But all this that Jesus is suffering is for us. And so when Jesus is sent off to be flogged, this is what was promised of him. This is what he is enduring. And so then we see in John chapter 19, verse 2, so all the soldiers, with Pilate's soldiers, get involved in this mocking as well. It's interesting, Caesar would have been king. Keep that in mind, because look at how they treat Jesus in comparative. They would never treat Caesar this way. So the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns, and they put it on his head. We've heard about these crowns of thorns. The irony is this crown of thorns was likely made from the same plant that provided the palm branches. Those same palm branches that were laid at Jesus' feet crying out, Hosanna, was believed to be from the date palm, and that date palm can produce thorns that can be up to 12 inches long. And so that when it's formed into this crown of thorns and is laid on his head, it literally would have appeared as if there was like this stardust around his head. They would almost sort of twinkle because it came to such a fine point. You know, so they're really, it is intended to be, in a sense, this crown and give him this imagery of crown and kingship, but it's just with such a mocking tone. So they gave him this crown of thorns and they clothed him in a purple robe, which would have been the color of kingship. And they went up to him again and again, saying, Hail, King of the Jews. And they'd slap him in the face. And some accounts would say that they spit in his face. Because it would have been customary, as you're greeting Caesar, you certainly would bow before him. And then you would perhaps treat him with a ceremonial kiss on the cheek. Well, instead of kissing, they would go up close and they would spit in his face. I mean, it's just harsh mocking. And we look at this and we disconnect ourselves. Just hang tight. I don't want to try to bash everyone down, but we talked about this last week where we kind of have to put ourselves in this proper position so that once we see our proper position and our depravity, then and only then I think we can start to see, despite that, we have been given so much. So here we are, just like the Jews, just like the Romans, kind of kneeling before Jesus and mocking. It's like, King of the Jews, really? King of my life, really? I don't know that I need that. When we sin, and I'm not trying to tear everyone down here so far that we're not seeing the bigger picture, but I want us to understand that we are guilty in the sense of the same thing when we spit in Jesus' face because we proclaim him Lord out of one side of our mouth, and then we tear each other down on the other side of the mouth, and we see what Jesus has said in the scriptures, that you people will know that you are my disciples if you will love one another. It's like, oh, I love Jesus, but you stink. I feel like that's just like spitting in Jesus' face. Maybe that seems a little harsh, but we call him king, and yet we kind of live in a way that's self-righteous to our own selves, and I don't think that that's okay. And so we're guilty, just as the Romans were guilty, just as the Jews were guilty, so are we guilty. However, when we're done today, you're going to see this glimpse of this hope and this freedom. So don't miss that. So we move on. Once more, Pilate came out. So he had just beaten Jesus, okay? He had Jesus flogged. They mocked him. They bring him out. Here is your king. Here is Jesus. I have beaten him. So first thing I tried to do, I told you he was innocent and you didn't want, that wasn't okay with you. You still wanted him, okay? So I sent him off to Herod because I didn't want to deal with the problem. I offered to give someone else in his stead, but you know, you wanted Jesus to be crucified. You wanted Barabbas to be let free. The fourth attempt is I beat him now. What else do you want? I gave him a beating. He didn't even deserve the beating, yet I gave him a beating. Now here he stands before you, and this is what he says. Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis or charge against him. So here's his Jesus. Look, I have beat him. He has served a punishment. Even that we see in Isaiah 53, he served his punishment. Now I will let him go. When Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said, here is the man. Pilate probably still only sees nothing but a man. Doesn't recognize the divinity that he's looking at. But I'm reminded of what we find in John 8:28. So Jesus said, when you have lifted up the Son of Man, then you will know. Right now, Pilate is clueless. He does not know. But there is going to come a day when he will know. When you raise up the Son of Man, then you will know that I am he, and that I do nothing on my own, but seek just what the Father has taught me. There will come a day where you will know that Jesus is who he said he is. And then John 19:6. So as soon as the chief priests and the officials saw him, they see Jesus. Pilate has brought him out. I've punished him. What else do you want? They're crying out, crucify him. Crucify him. And it gets worse. I mean, look at this. This is absolutely insane. Pilate answered, you take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him. Right? Pilate again has said, I don't see this man being guilty. This man is innocent. And yet here's the Jews saying, crucify him, crucify him. The Jewish leaders insisted, says, we have a law, and according to that law, he must die. Okay, you have your Roman law, and according to your Roman law, they're saying maybe he's not guilty. But according to our law, he's guilty. And our law says he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God. And you see some vague evidence in Leviticus, I want to say chapter 24, that kind of regards this idea of when you claim deity, then you are guilty of blasphemy and you should be put to death. However, there's a problem with that. If you claim divinity and you are divine, I don't think blasphemy fits the equation. And that's exactly what we're looking at here. But yet they're missing it. So when Pilate heard this, this is wonderful. So Pilate hears what they just said. Finally, there's that accusation. All right, they gave the accusations of he's trying to raise a stir in all of Rome. He is not wanting to pay taxes, and he calls himself a king. The king one was true, the other two are false. But here's where it lays it down. The Jews say, oh, by the way, here's the real problem, is he says that he is God. And that's a problem for us. We're going to have to kill him for that. And Pilate hears this and was even more afraid because you just brought in, not only is his wife involved, not only are the Jews involved, not only are the Roman leaders involved, but now you're bringing in the gods. You're bringing in the divine. And now Pilate's got to deal with another avenue. And so he went back inside. I just love this. I love this question. He goes back inside and says to Jesus, they just heard. He says he's the Son of God. So he goes back in with Jesus and says, who did you say you were? Because there's something bigger going on here that I wasn't aware of. There's something more here that I need to understand. He says, who did you say you are? Where did you say you came from? You know, that kingdom that you were talking about before, I didn't quite grasp that, but okay, tell me again, where did you come from? And Jesus gave him no answer. He says, do you refuse to speak to me? I have the power. Don't you realize I have the power to either free you or crucify you? Pilate's basically saying, I am in total control of this situation right now. And you will stay silent? And Jesus answered, you have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. And there's a kind of a double meaning here, because both are true. Basically, Jesus is, in a sense, appealing to Pilate, saying, Pilate, just so you understand, Caesar is above you. All right? You do have someone who is an authority over you. You are under someone else's control, and that's Caesar. Also, there's someone who gave Caesar that power. There's someone who gives you your power. And guess what? It's me. I'm the one that kind of gave that to you. So you think you're controlling me right now? You have no control. But I'm allowing this to happen because I am in control. Just mind-blowing. So he says, therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin. Notice there are two sins involved. There's the one who handed me over. The Jews are guilty of a greater sin than Pilate. That's what it's saying in the scriptures here. Don't ask me the questions about, I thought all sins were the same. That's not the time for that. But there's this reality of the Jews are guilty of a greater sin. That's just what it's saying. But that does not diminish the fact that Pilate is also involved in sin. In this situation right now, Pilate is also sinning. Though he will try to wash himself clean of it, he cannot do that. And that's where we come to this conclusion. It's just absolutely thrilling. From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jewish leaders kept shouting, if you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. All right, this is that position playing, saying, we're going to tell Caesar. If you let him go, we're going to kind of make this bad for you. We're going to go tell Caesar, and Caesar's going to come. You probably lose your job, you lose your life, whatever the case is. That's a fear factor for Pilate. We will tell that you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar. This man claimed to be a king. He opposes Caesar. You can't let that happen. Verse 13, when Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judgment seat at a place known as the stone pavement, which in Aramaic is Gabbatha. It was the day of preparation of the Passover, and it was about noon. And he says, here is your king. Here he is. Here is your king, Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, take him away, take him away, crucify him. Now, this is all the Jews. Something has happened here. It's not just Jewish leaders anymore. That a week ago, they were throwing palm branches down and proclaiming him Hosanna, and now they're saying crucify him. And I have a theory. It's my own theory. You won't find this, I don't think, in any other textbooks, but maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, but it's a thought that came to my head. There's this reality that we look at politics sometimes. And we look at whoever holds the opposing view of politics. If we find out that if we're a Republican and someone's a Democrat, suddenly we kind of come against that person and say, ah, you're a Democrat. I don't like you. Or it's the vice versa. I'm a Democrat and you're a Republican. And we kind of go, ah, you align with the Republicans. I don't like you. In some capacity, I sense that maybe something like that is going on here. Where all of these Jews who had just been proclaiming Jesus, you know, king, but here you now you have a Roman leader proclaiming Jesus Christ as innocent. Catch the parallel here. Now, as a Jew, what the Roman official is saying sets me off like, I don't trust what you say. I don't like what you say. You're trying to defend this guy. You and Jesus, maybe the Roman leaders and Jesus are somehow in cahoots. I'm not okay with that. Is that what possibly turns some of these Jews? It's possible. I don't know. But I see that there's this intense emotion that somehow builds up. Somehow turns from Hosanna to hatred. The hearts that seem to be ready to be soft are suddenly rock solid. And certainly there's spiritual matters involved as well. And they say, take him away, crucify him. And he says, shall I crucify your king? And look at this response. We have no king but Caesar. Are you serious? Looking at 1 Samuel chapter 8. Old Testament. The history of Israel was like this. They had a king, and God was their king. They looked around at the nations around them, and they said, we want a king like other nations. Give us a king like other nations. And this is the response then. This is God and the prophet Samuel. So the people said, we want a king like every other nation. But when they said, give us a king to lead us, this displeased Samuel. So Samuel prayed to the Lord, and the Lord told him, listen to all that the people are saying to you. It is not you that they have rejected, but they have rejected me as their king. And now we have no king but Caesar. That's a slap in the face. That's a spit in the face. That is incredible. You have the Jews who should recognize God as their king, have now made it verbally known across all of that area, Caesar is our king. That's insane. And they hated Caesar. Finally, Pilate handed him over to them to to be crucified. And we see in Matthew, Matthew's account wraps up like this, and this is what we're going to kind of wrap it up with. Look at this. So when Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but that instead an uproar was starting, he took water and he washed his hands in front of the crowd. And so he goes in, he washes his hands in front of the crowd, and basically he ends up saying, okay, this man is innocent. And so I am washing my hands. I have nothing to do with the death of this man. I have nothing to do with the shedding of his innocent blood. I am clean. Okay? I am not taking responsibility for this. It is your responsibility. You take it. And all the people answered, his blood is on us and on our children. And what's amazing is they were exactly right. They were guilty of crucifying Christ. But what they didn't understand is that blood that was shed was about ready to be on them and cover them for their sins. Is that not astounding? So even in the midst of the guilt, even in the midst of the depravity, you have Jesus Christ there who's ready to shed his blood for the remission of sins to all of his accusers, totally in control. It is absolutely mind-blowing what Jesus did. And what we're going to see in the next few weeks is when Jesus is on the cross, you will see literally the place where we should be is where Christ is at. And he does it willingly. That whole idea of what we talked about here, where here's this lamb, we will sacrifice this lamb so that this person can go free. And here's Jesus saying, I will sacrifice myself so that this person can go free. You're all guilty of putting Christ on the cross, but you're also all free when you accept the fact that he died and paid that penalty for you. What an emotional contrast. I'm guilty, I'm redeemed. I'm guilty, I'm redeemed. So don't lose sight of the fact that, yep, I'm guilty, but Lord Jesus Christ, thank you so much that you love me enough to redeem me. I'm going to invite Lane and the worship team. I feel like I've left it heavy, and my goal is not to leave it heavy, but there's a certain capacity where we have to come to this realization where we have to own our depravity, because once we own our depravity, then and only then do I think we can really understand what it is that we've been given, which is just incredible, incredible freedom in Christ.